Hello and welcome to the Football Diary podcast, where Mike and Dave weren't brave enough to join me after Villa's 3-1 win against Man United. So we've been joined by top of the league Isaac, and we'll see Arsenal's glory this weekend and how he feels about that, as well as unpicking Unai Emery's impact at Villa early on and whether Spurs or Liverpool can make the top four. So first of all, thank you for joining me today, Isaac.
No, mate. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, we'll start then with your former manager and we'll think about how Villa got on this weekend, because a really instant impact from Unai Emery after a pretty turgid start to the season under Steven Gerrard. Mm. In different time under caretaker manager, not my uncle, Aaron Danks. It's interesting to see how they got on in a really big test, actually. At Villa Park, their first win against Man United at Villa Park in 27 years. I've seen one in my lifetime and I was 1 year old. So this is fantastic to start off Emery's campaign. What do you think of him as the new Villa manager to start off with? Obviously, you're quite familiar with him.
Yeah. I think first of all, it's a fantastic win. You blew him away in that first half, and it was great. It was funny to see Unai Emery's face. Like, it was all going the exact way he wanted it to go, but he was just trying to stay. You could see him trying to stay so calm. But yeah, you were just far better, and it happens. I think when you've had a bad manager and then you get that bounce, don't you? And, it was a huge game to have a bounce against. So Man United have been in such great form. But I think Villa showed United for what they are at the moment. They've been in good form, but they're not, people can run away with that and get too excited. Yeah. But I think Villa were class. And and Emery, fair play to him.
That was my favourite thing about the win, to be honest. Very often when one of the bigger sides loses, you think about what they did wrong. And you say, well, they made these mistakes, they got this part of their game wrong. But actually, I felt like Villa won this game because Villa played very well. United, of course, they did make mistakes and they were vulnerable in certain areas, but that came from a good performance from Villa rather than their own downfall. And it was really interesting to see how Emery changed the system. It was really clear what he wanted to achieve. You're right. You could see his plan in action. And he's such a tactician that's always going to happen. Mm. He changed the system. He did put Watkins and Bailey up front. But by having two central players that are very comfortable out wide, they tagged themselves onto United centre-backs and then drew him out of position. So Watkins, for example, in that first goal, he puts himself on Lindelof.
Exactly.
He's deep on the pitch out wide, brings him away. All of a sudden, once he's beaten him on that turn, Bailey's got acres of space to run into. Yeah. And it was fantastic seeing the impact of a real coach with a week, not even a week, he had 3 days worth of training and he got a system in place. And that's going to be a massive thing for a team like Villa, really. And when Ten Hag is such a philosopher and a coach himself, it was really interesting to see someone go toe to toe. Was there any individual performances that stood out for you in this game?
Jacob Ramsey was class. Mm. I thought from start to finish, I thought he rocked it, actually, to be honest. And Mings. Mings was very good. He sort of looked like Mings of a couple of seasons ago, where he had his confidence back and he was like charging around the pitch like a man on a mission instead of, he's been a bit within himself, having the captaincy taken away and stuff like that, maybe. But those two guys. Everyone had a good game. Leon Bailey played well, Dina played well. But I think, those two guys really stood out for me. Ramsey seemed like a really accomplished midfielder in that game, I thought.
That's really nice to see, because actually, Ramsey and Dean Smith was always potential, and we never really... I didn't feel like we ever saw what Smith saw in him. And then when Gerrard first came in, immediately he looked better. And he was one of the only players that I think you could genuinely say improved under the time at Gerrard. But I didn't expect him to start this game. I didn't think he would be Emery's man straight away. And actually, it was phenomenal. He was everywhere. He was really busy. And when Watkins and Bailey drifted out wide, it was up to Ramsey and Buendia to fill that space in the middle. And he did that really well. Yeah. He arrived late in the box for his own goal. He was the provider for Bailey's goal. He knew the spaces to occupy. And that's really good for a young midfielder to see. And you're right with Mings. He had Ronaldo on toast. It was so easy for him. I actually think you could say Mings has been Villa's player of the season. And considering what he's been through with Gerrard and kind of falling out of favour at times... Mings, I think, because he's such a big presence, if you're not a Villa fan, you hear about a couple of mistakes that he's made across the season and don't give him credit for how phenomenal he is in every other moment. Against Fulham, for example, the game that lost his job, he scores an own goal. He doesn't score an own goal. It's forced upon him.
Yeah,
What's not mentioned is the time that he clears the ball off the line from a Mitrovic header. No one thinks about his defensive strength. And this was really nice to see that showcased against United, against Ronaldo, a big physical presence. He was fantastic. Yeah. So hopefully under a good coach, we'll see that. Definitely. United were lucky in some ways as well. It could have been worse. Ronaldo had a VAR check to see if he should have been sent off. Yeah. Lisandro Martinez, I don't know how he isn't sent off. He swings three elbows at Leon Bailey, wins him for 3 minutes. The VAR looks at him and goes, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, he had something against him, didn't he? I don't know what that was.
It was interesting, but United face Villa again on Thursday. And I'll be interested to see if Ronaldo is still the captain for their Carabao Cup game. What do you think of Ronaldo's situation at Man United right now? A week suspension and then a captain in the next week. What happened there?
It is a bit ridiculous. It does sort of, it shows where they're at the moment in terms of a leader in that team. Obviously, Maguire's not going to get it. I mean, he was probably he's obviously the most senior player in the team, but the weekend, he was the only person you probably really would have given it to. You wouldn't have given it to Casemiro. I think they said about his English not being fantastic and he's brand new there. They're not going to give. But if I'm honest, I felt a bit sorry for him because he shouldn't have done what he did in the Spurs game and was rightly disciplined for that. But for your own, I just feel like Ten Hag's got it in for him. And for Ten Hag to come out, be asked why he got the captaincy, and then to list five or six players, oh, Maguire didn't get it because of this, De Gea didn't get it because of this, Casemiro didn't get it, and list five or six players, and then go, so he gave it to Cristiano Ronaldo. I just thought it was unnecessary. He doesn't have to explain his decision there. But, you know, I'm the manager. I gave it to Ronaldo because I gave it to him because he's a fantastic player. But he's basically come out and said, well, he's our sixth choice and no one else could have it. So that's why. And I just thought, it's just not going to help the relationship, is it? I know he wants to go and I know Ten Hag probably doesn't want him there anyway, but you just sort of think, mate, but you've got to live together like within this period anyway. So I just thought it was a bit of a sly comment that he didn't need to make, but yeah.
Do you think he's gone by the end of the January window?
Oh, if someone comes in for him and gives him the right money, I don't think he'd necessarily care who it was. I think if it's just if the boxes are ticked, he's gone. I don't think he necessarily cares who it is. But yeah.
I think there might be one destination that would break some United fans' hearts, but it's probably the most likely and we'll go there next. Chelsea might need a new striker after a pretty flat display against league leaders Arsenal, right? You must be buzzing with this one.
Obama who?
We just leave it at that part now, right? Nothing personal.
Obama who? Yeah, man, yeah.
So 1-0 for you, boys. What did you make of the game, first of all?
Brilliant. Yeah, of course it was, man. Like, it was just a nice performance again. Just solid. You know, it's not easy going to Stamford Bridge. The fans are literally right on top of you and Chelsea's a good side. But they were just solid again. Like, it's nice to watch an Arsenal team. For once. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? They just showed some maturity, funny enough, you know, based on the size. It's a young team. No one expects Arsenal to be where they are. But they just, you know, they did control the game. Chelsea didn't do anything, really. Arsenal were actually, I thought, a bit off the pace in the first half. Odegaard, Partey, Zinchenko looked like he was a bit slow coming back. In that final third, the whole game, really, they were a bit lax. They didn't really create loads. But they never looked out of control in the game. There was never a point where I thought, oh, Chelsea are going to like come and score here. They just, you know, a lot of that is how Chelsea are playing at the moment. But they just took it to them, played their game, eventually got the goal. You know, it wasn't the best goal ever. And after that, they just saw the game out. And it was brilliant for us, really. But yeah, and you know, last final few minutes, Xhaka wasted a bit of time, had to do what he'd done. But...
Lovely man.
Yeah.
I think when you've got this London rivalry and Chelsea fans are a bit notorious for being at Arsenal fans sometimes. So does it feel like your biggest win of the season overcoming that test? Obviously, new manager, Chelsea piecing things together, Aubameyang's there, that narrative. You beat Liverpool and they've not necessarily been at their strongest. But was this, did this feel like really the start of something special this season?
I don't know if it feels like the biggest win, because each one that each win that happens sort of seems to feel bigger almost, because it, because it's almost like a step closer and then for you to start dreaming about winning the Premiership. Do you know what I mean? But there was a few factors that made it that Potter and Arteta, half of me thought Arteta was going to tactically ruin it and go and do too much and overthink it and wreck it. He didn't do that. Every time a player goes from Arsenal to another Premier League club, they will inevitably score against us the next time. So Aubameyang doing absolutely niched was rare and brilliant. And but to be honest, like I think we've beat them the last three times at the Bridge now.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's somewhere we know we can get a result. I think in terms of a mentality thing, Liverpool's the biggest one this season.
Okay.
Definitely. Because and Spurs,
we beat Spurs at home. Yeah, but you expect to beat Spurs at the moment, don't you, really?
Yeah, true.
I also wonder if people are underplaying Arsenal a little bit. Now, the reason I say this is, it's felt like the narrative all season has been Man City are going to walk away with this. And Arsenal are still top. There's one more game in the league before the World Cup now. And Arsenal are still top. And there always seems to be a reason for that. It's they've not played anyone good. Oh, well, they lost to Man United. I'm expecting that to go wrong now. Oh, well, Liverpool aren't really in form anyway. Haaland is going to win the league for Man City. Oh, you've scored five against Forest, but Jesus hasn't scored. Is that a worry? Or you're playing Saka too much. Is that a worry? You're still top. Why do you think people aren't taking Arsenal seriously enough, maybe, as title contenders?
I think it, as time goes on, I think you will be forced to take Arsenal seriously, whoever it was sitting at the top other than City. As time goes, that's what proves it. But I think everyone looks at City, they're just this machine that just doesn't stop. They just win the Premiership. That's just what they do. And I think everyone's just waiting for that fall from Arsenal. But seemingly it's not come yet, I've been thinking, Arsenal seem a little bit different in the sense of, I thought it was a momentum thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, when they lost against United, I thought that'd be it. The stupid result against Southampton, that'll be it. But they've not. They've gone next game, pick themselves up. That was stupid. Right, carry on. And they've just carried. They've just almost let that be what it was and just carried on, which, you know, I think will serve Arsenal very well throughout the season. But, you know, people always pick on little different things. And like you say, Jesus hasn't scored. That's fine. You know, he hasn't scored.
Fantastic.
And he's going to want to be scoring. But that's not his only role in Arsenal's team. There was a stat where Arsenal won the ball back in the final third 16 times.
Yeah.
And I think that was Arsenal's most for however many numbers of seasons. That's because of him. It's not, you know, he's the one that starts that. He blocks this pass and then you know, Odegaard and Saka or whoever will follow him behind. But it all starts from him. So, and you know, he took the ball off of Thiago Silva, won the corner, goal was scored from that.
Exactly.
So, you know, but as far as people not thinking Arsenal are contenders, if I'm honest, if it was another team doing what Arsenal were doing, I would be thinking, but City are 2 points behind. It's one loss, you know, and they're yet to play City. So I think
that'd be huge.
That if Arsenal get a result from that, that's the biggest game. That's the biggest result.
Yeah, of course. And I think it's funny because I would imagine neutrals would be behind Arsenal right now. They sit in front of City, oil money. Newcastle are third, oil money. And all right, Arsenal are rich enough, but they've got a young team, some dynamic players, a young coach. It's exciting to see them doing well. Another young coach that maybe isn't doing as well as we maybe perceived is Graham Potter. Started seemingly well at Chelsea and obviously has had problems. He loves to play with wing-backs, and Reece James and Ben Chilwell are both injured. That doesn't help. But that's a couple of losses on the bounce in the Premier League now. Not looking so inspiring. I think 2 goals in the last 4 games.
Yeah.
Has Potter got a bigger job in his hands than maybe he realised at first?
Yeah, I do think that. And I feel for him in a bit in the fact that I don't think it was the best time for him to go to Chelsea. There's a lot of, you know, like new ownership, and then obviously the way Tuchel went, they had a big clear out in the summer, bought in like a lot of site. So it was a weird transition for him to now come in and start and, you know, oh, get some results now, which you have to do at Chelsea. If you're not getting the results, you're out on your ear. That's just the way it is. Everyone knows that. But he's a great manager, but there's a lot of things that are against him. I mean, it's his first big job, which is, and it's Chelsea. Do you know what I mean? It's a, like I say, they'll kick you straight out. So I don't know. I think if he can get the time, he's clearly a very good manager.
Yeah,
you know, he's like what he's done at Brighton and stuff like that. And I really like him. I think Graham Potter's a fantastic manager, and I hope they give him the time. Whether they will or not, you don't know. But I think he'll pick it up.
It's difficult. So we're saying that we think Potter's a very good manager. Question for you then: is Ralf Hasenhüttl a good manager? not sure anymore. He's lost his job today at last. Yeah. It feels like it's been a long time coming. But every time it looked like he was going to go before, he turned around a little corner, got a big result here or there. It doesn't feel like that long ago that he was being linked with some really big jobs. When he first took over at Southampton, I think he was the favourite for the Arsenal job when Arteta took it at one point. Yeah. So his stock has plummeted and he's now out of a job. What's gone wrong there, do you think?
I think it's just run its course. I think him at Southampton has run its course. Not many people get away with. It was 2-9-0.
Yeah, it's two. Rubbish,
wasn't it? Yeah, you might get one in your managerial reign at a team, but escaping two is massive. And yeah, I think he's just taking it. He's taking them as far as he can take them.
Yeah,
and they've got their owners now. I think they're definitely looking to change it. But I don't know. Do I think he's a great manager? No. I think his benefit at the time was he looked a bit like Klopp.
And people
were comparing him to Klopp.
Yeah. And Alpine Klopp,
That's it. And he was coming in under that. But I think now that that's faded,
It's a difficult job though, Southampton. I mean, you look at their summer, they brought in a lot of very young players with no Premier League experience. Joe Aribo is a good signing, but other than that, what did they really do? And then this time last year, they lost Danny Ings. Now, all right, he's not pulling up trees at Villa, but he was at Southampton, and replacing that is hard.
Yep.
Che Adams isn't a goal scorer like Ings is. Adam Armstrong didn't settle the way that they wanted. Theo Walcott was still playing at the weekend, which
I can't believe he's still around.
It's bizarre. So I do wonder whether he was hamstrung a little bit by what Southampton's plan is going forward now, how much he can achieve. There are players that he's definitely advanced their careers for. Kyle Walker-Peters is a much better player since he's been there. James Ward-Prowse has improved. I don't know where we see Hasenhüttl next. When his name comes back up for another job, what's his level now? That's the thing that I'm unsure of. And it looks like they're turning to Nathan Jones from Luton, which, again, another young, untested in the Premier League. What are Southampton hoping for this season? Survival at best?
Yeah, but again, it's a hard thing to ask a manager. He's never been a manager in the Premiership. You know, he's done well for Luton, went back to Luton, obviously. And I think that's got to be number one goal, isn't it? Stay up. But, you know, taking over a team to try and stay up when you're a young man, it's not. But then he might see it as an opportunity. Obviously, you know, he gets himself a Premier League team. And if he does it, then hopefully he can build on that for the next season and that boosts his career or whatever. But it's a big ask, man, to be, bringing in young Jones in and going, keeps up. Because they don't look like they've got a lot about them a lot of the time. Like you say, there are flashes of it, but not week in, week out.
So on the other side of that result, a huge result for Newcastle. A 4-1 win for them. They continue to have the best defence in the Premier League. Another 4 goals scored. Another goal for Almiron.
There's just no stopping him at the moment.
And they sit third in the league all of a sudden. Yeah. Now, Spurs and United both have games in hand, I think, but wouldn't catch them even if they won. Newcastle are ahead of schedule, surely.
Yeah.
It's scary to see what they could achieve this year, maybe?
Yeah, it's true. And with the team they've got as well, I know we keep saying it, but they've brought in players that are already in the Premiership and, you know, maybe for struggling clubs and stuff, and they've brought them all together and they've just made this fantastic team, and they're just this immovable object at the moment. They're just, I'll be honest, I would not want to play Newcastle at the moment. That's one of the hardest games you'll face at this time.
I can say with confidence that's true after a 4-0 loss last weekend. Yeah, true, trust me.
Yeah.
It's funny as well, because I wonder whether they stick or twist in January. So the World Cup will happen, then the January transfer window comes about. Now, they would not have expected top four this season. No. If they're still there in January, do they then go, right, throw money in now and let's try and get there quicker than we planned to? Can you see that happening with Newcastle this year?
I don't know if they need to. I don't know if they need to throw in money. I think the way they're going, if they just keep this trajectory and this consistency, they'll be fine. They'll get it anyway. Because there's too many teams that are flailing around them. But I could definitely see him, you know, one or two, especially with Isak out for a little while and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think they'll, you know, one or two smart moves. But I don't think they'll uproot the whole team again and, you know, and buy a load of superstars now. I just can't see that happening, because they've got a good thing. So I don't think they're just going to throw that away. But a couple of additions, obviously, it's always going to help.
The big ones I'm expecting is James Maddison. There was talk of him in the summer a lot, and he's been amazing this season for Leicester.
He's been class.
They're quietly creeping up as well. Remember, they were rock bottom for a long time. They got another win this weekend, so that's good for them. But I do wonder with Newcastle whether actually Eddie Howe was actually the right appointment for him. Because I think a few people questioned it. If you were trying to build something that was going to get there, but they're solid. They look brilliant.
I did. I actually thought, I like Eddie Howe, but I wondered about who, you know, obviously the manager's not the be all and end all of who comes into a club, but who was going to come into the club and how he was going to manage them in this period. And it just, to me, it looked like, get Eddie Howe in, he's a good name. And then when we really start gathering pace, then we'll get a proper, you know, a big European manager or whatever. And then he'll take us on and hopefully we'll win a trophy from that. But Eddie Howe looks like your man at the moment.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
He's doing the business, and, you know, more power to him. I like Eddie Howe. I think he's done a good job at Bournemouth. With the resources he had then. And
100%.
He's really, really taken that team to places, which, I'm happy
for. And it looks like they might be there competing in the top four with the likes of Spurs and Liverpool, who played out an interesting game, let's call it. Liverpool getting a win, which they really, really needed. 2-1 over Spurs.
Well done, Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be very neutral in this. just as we always are when we talk about Liverpool normally. It's going to be hard.
Yeah.
A really interesting result, because actually Salah gets 2 goals, which I think is massive for him, particularly with the way he started this season. I don't know what I make of either of these teams, though. This felt like two bold men fighting over a comb at times.
Yeah, it did.
I don't actually know if either of them are any good. Spurs seem to just think the first half doesn't matter to us, so we just won't play for 45 minutes. And then the second half, they really could have got something from the game. So why are Spurs starting games so slowly? Because we've seen it time after time. I think 6 games in a row they've gone behind now.
Yeah, you tell me. I don't know. I do not know. They're so rubbish in the first half. They're so slow. They don't create anything. They just let the game come to them. They almost let the game happen to them. Whatever way it goes, then that's the way we'll go with the game. But and then the second half, they go, oh, actually, we probably need to pull something out here, which they did like that. But take nothing away from Liverpool. They were very good in that first half. They played some nice football. Not Liverpool of old. They weren't at that level, but, you know, they were looking more energetic, like the Liverpool we're used to. You know, Nunes is obviously still quite raw, I think.
And yeah, definitely.
The wrong decision every single time he's on the ball, other than when he scored. but Liverpool played some nice football in that first half. But then again, like you say, completely flipped on its head for the second half.
And
Spurs could have come away with 2-2 easily, or even won it.
Yeah, it did seem that way. There were a couple of moments where I thought Liverpool rode their luck. Obviously, Spurs, I think they hit the woodwork twice. The big talking point was, is it a penalty? Trent Alexander-Arnold obviously leans into Sessegnon Young. It looks like a push. We saw Cancelo get sent off for Man City doing the same thing against Fulham and a penalty being given. Trent does it later on in the game outside the box to Sessegnon Young and it's given as a foul. Have Liverpool got away with one a little bit there, do you think?
Yes. For me, yes. Yeah. They've got away with one. Yeah, I think Trent's very lucky there. He sort of tried, but he pushed him in the back. He pushed him in the back.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's maybe it'd be a little bit soft, but I don't know. I think he's definitely got away with one there, yeah. It's a penalty for me.
And Klopp won't care. Liverpool getting a win is huge for them as they're trying to get their way back up the table. But from a Spurs point of view, it seemed in the summer they did so much business and they brought in some very, very good players, but it was really obvious the kind of player they were missing. They've got very combative midfielders, but they miss that number 10. They haven't replaced Christian Eriksen still, I think we can say. Now, right. Kulusevski is so creative, and when he came on, that was a massive difference.
Yeah, they changed it, yeah.
And they're missing Son, they're still missing Richarlison, but how do Spurs fill that gap? Who do they need? Is there someone already there that can do that? Because that, to me, was the obvious thing. Because Kane does too much of it still. And you need him on the end of those chances. So how does Spurs tweak what they've currently got to not fall behind in this top four race, do you think?
It is hard, like you say. With Son out of side, what do they do? Because like you, I 100% agree. Kane does that far too much. And last season, maybe it worked because Son then took on that role and was like, right, well, I'm just going to go for a run. And he'd see the ball 9 times out of 10 and put it away. Fine. But when that's not happening this season, you then start not blaming Kane, but you start looking to him going, well, you need to be up top. And I think they're in trouble at the moment if they don't sort that out. I think they probably need to try and bring someone in. Because like you say, you've got Bentancur in the middle, Bissouma, Højbjerg. They love a challenge, but they're not a number 10, and they definitely need to bring someone in. But then that's another risk. Do you know what I mean? Are you going to go out in January, spend a load of money on trying to bring in someone, hope it potentially works, whether it does or not? I don't know. Maybe they just wait for Son to get back. That might be the best option at the moment for them. But whereas fall behind, I don't know, because Spurs always thereabouts, but they're not helping their chances of top four at the moment with the way they're playing.
With that in mind, do either of these sides make top four? Do both of them make top four? Do one of them? What do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you have to say that, well, from my perspective, I hope Arsenal's place is sewn up. You would hope that. So obviously there's two spots gone. So you've got Chelsea probably going to fall out of it. Newcastle playing incredibly well, deserve to be in it at the moment. Liverpool, do they both get in?
A thought on that?
Yes, maybe. Yeah.
You think both of them? Interesting.
As well as Newcastle are playing, I hope I'm wrong, because I'd prefer to see Newcastle in it, because I can't stand Liverpool and Spurs. But I just think they might fall away. These teams, you know, they're used to getting themselves into the Champions League. Spurs done it last season. Do you know what I mean? Last within game of the league, they clinched it. So I think they probably could just do it again.
It's interesting because last season's top four obviously was Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea and Spurs. The Premier League has never seen three teams drop out of the top four in the next season. Only ever two. And actually, I think you can argue that could happen this year. All of a sudden, you could see Arsenal, City, maybe Newcastle. And if United can get themselves together and get back in, it's more competitive than we've ever seen it is what I think for this top four. And that's brilliant to watch. There's a lot of competition in the league at various levels. And actually, the table's so congested. That's why we say, like, Leicester flew up all of a sudden.
Yeah.
A couple of wins. Jesse Marsh looked like he was going to lose his job. Two wins. Leeds are back up there. So this season does seem like the gap is closing a little bit, other than maybe the top two right now. Do you think that Conte being Spurs' manager and Klopp being Liverpool's manager is enough that that's going to take them above the rest of the teams that are still trying to fight for it. Yeah. Like you say, they've been there and done it at that club, but also just clearly top level coaches.
Yeah, that's it. If you're gonna want someone at the end of a season to pull you through, Klopp and Conte are probably the two managers you'd pick out of those, out of Chelsea, United, and yeah, Newcastle as well. They are, but you never know though with Spurs. They could self-destruct. Like that, I've got a feeling that they might end up being their own worst enemy, because they this season probably thought that they should be the ones that are in Arsenal's position, you know, really challenging for that, or at least knocking on the door of it. And you know, you hear Spurs fans and they hate the football. So if it carries on and they don't get the results, they could end up shooting themselves in the foot and pushing Conte out, and then they're really screwed from that point. But
I think he's still out of contract at the end of the season as well. They've not tied that up properly. Yeah. And yeah, there are a lot of Spurs fans that want him gone, which is just a bizarre thing to me. If you're a club and you fail Mourinho and Conte in a row, that's just shocking to me.
Nuts. But Spurs fans are the ones who will do it. I'll tell you now, they are the ones that will shoot themselves in the foot. Because they'll go, we should be this and we should be that, not realizing what they've got in Conte, mate. He's the winner out of them two, Spurs or Conte. Who's the winner? Conte's the one who wins stuff. They've got
This is a team that sacked Mourinho the week of a cup final that he got into. So nothing would surprise you. Sticking with those two teams, though, let's talk a little bit about the Champions League draw, because actually, I feel like this is the most exciting draw we've had for a round of 16 in a really
brilliant
long time.
Brilliant draw. Yeah.
Two teams out of Liverpool, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich will be out by the quarterfinals. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. So obviously Real Madrid drew Liverpool, which they always do. I think that's 4 years out of the last six they've had Liverpool in the Champions League. And Bayern PSG is another replay of a final. So there's loads of narrative to be around. Mm. And actually, the thing that I'm really drawn to is some of the teams that, if it was harsh to call them smaller teams when they're in the Champions League, but the smaller teams left in the competition have drawn each other. So you're automatically going to have one of Bruges or Benfica in the next round, one of Eintracht Frankfurt or Napoli. That's amazing. Yeah. So what's your pick of the draw? What do you see happening here? What are you excited by in this?
Yeah, those two are clearly the takeaway draws. I mean, Liverpool and Real Madrid, that's going to be an exciting one. And you don't know what way it's going to go, because they're both so great in that competition. And Liverpool can pull it out of somewhere like they do. So, you know, they'll be useless in the Premiership, but they'll just pull it out in the Champions League. I think City go through. They're still a good side, but it's one of the kind of draws they could have.
Always happens to them.
Yeah, they always get it, don't they? Yeah, especially in this round. I think Chelsea Dortmund will be a fantastic matchup. I'm really looking forward to both of them games. Seeing Bellingham hopefully destroy them, but yeah, and then like PSG Munich. That, again, that's a hard one, because PSG self.
Munich haven't started that well.
But they just look like they're scoring through different options this year, as opposed to Lewandowski through the middle. I mean, they've Mane started quite well and stuff, but yeah,
we'll call it the Eric Choupo-Moting derby. See if he can come at the goods. Spurs, obviously, they have AC Milan as well, so you'll be hoping Giroud does you some favours. That's an interesting draw. Again, narrative. Conte being the Inter Milan manager for as long as he was and having success there, now against AC Milan again. I don't know how to call that one either.
I don't. Chelsea, obviously, done them home and away in the group, which is two brilliant results. But I don't see Spurs doing that. I think that'd be all the matchups are really, really good, really even.
Yeah. And speaking of good matchups, the one we'll talk about in the Europa League playoff round, of course, Man United get Barcelona. That's perfect.
It is. Yeah. And it's just, do you know what? It's just one of them where it proves time and time again why you have to win your group. I understand putting out, teams will put out like a, not a second rate squad, that's not right, but they'll rest a few players here and there. Arsenal have done it, you know, all teams tend to do it in the Europa League, but that's this is the prime reason why you have to make sure you win your league, because now you've got to play another round and that you get drawn Barcelona. Of course you do. So I've got to be honest, though, really looking forward to that.
If United win that, it's hilarious to watch Barcelona drop out of it straight away. That'll
the demise of Barcelona is shocking, but
I'll be happy again, to watch it.
Yeah, it's a good draw again, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not. You look at Barcelona and think, "Oh my life!" But they were useless in the Champions League.
Yeah,
Man United could, but you know, they're not out of that. They're definitely in with a shout of that. It's a 50-50 race, I think, between the two of them.
The only thing that bothers me about it is this weird record that Spanish teams have against English teams in Europe.
Mm.
That's the only thing. There seems to be this hoodoo where Spanish teams just have English teams' numbers. Yeah. Other than that, I'd look at it and go, I think United are favourites. I really would otherwise, but
probably.
We'll see. We've got a little bit of time to wait before then. It'll be a completely different squad. Ronaldo might not be there by then. Yeah, who knows?
Mate. Ronaldo's been playing everything for changes.
That'd be ridiculous. Might be cup tied. I don't know.
Yeah, it's cup tied as well.
Right. Well, as always, we finish off really quickly then with our hero of the week, our villain of the week, and our goal of the week. And I've been left with that one this week. I'm going to start with the goal of the week. I love your take. I know that you had one that you thought maybe, but for me, I think we can rename this section the "What did Yuri Tielemans do this week?" section. Unbelievable goal against Everton. The way he sets himself up. That's a beautiful touch. The volley is perfect. The best thing as well is Boubacar Soumaré is celebrating and dancing behind him, which is just brilliant to watch. So yeah, for all of that, Tielemans gets goal of the week for that me. You had one other contender though, right?
Yeah, Visa.
Visa,
more for the ball. That ball was incredible, but great finish as well. Little dink over the keeper. But yeah, as that was just a delightful goal to watch. But yeah, Tielemans probably does just edge it, maybe.
I'll take it. I'm going to go to villain of the week next, because you definitely are going to agree with me on this one. If your own fans make up a chant about you that goes, "He can't defend, he can't attack, Emerson Royale is our wing back," that tells you you're doing something wrong. At the moment, it's comical watching Emerson Royale.
The guy's
obviously
useless.
Matt Doherty had that weird thing where Conte said, "Well, I'm not picking him because I don't want to lose," which was taken a little bit out of context, but Emerson Royale's got to be on his way out of Spurs sometime soon, I'm sure. We didn't exactly see the two best right backs in that game, did we? But I'll leave Trent alone for a change, because I get caught up with that one. And then my hero of the week, I'm going to be honest, you probably won't like this one as much. Now, it's been an underwhelming time for Gareth Bale in America, it's safe to say. 13 games, I think he's only started two of them, and two goals, not really what you'd expect. However, LAFC got to the MLS Cup final, which was played this weekend, and they are 3-2 down in extra time. Gareth Bale has come on and scored a last-minute header to take it to penalties, and LA win the tournament.
Palacios clipping it up, Bale!
So the best thing about it was the American commentary of it, where Gareth Bale jumps above the centre-back to win the header, and the commentator said, "He's dunked on him," just such an American reference. But crying enough, the MLS season, getting himself ready for the World Cup with a trophy. He didn't even take a penalty in the shootout, which I thought was hilarious.
Ridiculous.
No, he's really on holiday there, but he's won a cup there. So Gareth Bale, well done. You can be our hero.
Yeah.
In the meantime, away from this, continue to follow us. We're doing our World Cup preview at the moment. We're looking at every single one of the 32 teams going into Qatar and doing a 1-minute upload of what we think of their chances and their current squad. Very quickly, actually, it's worth mentioning, Brazil squad came out today. Jesus and Martinelli made it. Gabriel didn't.
Weird.
So
weird.
Interesting. But none of them made the last squad. So it's good to see those two back anyway. But our Brazil episode is already up. So you can see what we think of how the Premier League stars will impact Brazil's time at the tournament. I think they're going to win it. There's my spoiler. But please do subscribe on YouTube, follow us on Instagram, give us a like. We're building as a channel. We really appreciate your support. And I appreciate your support today, Isaac. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Honestly, really enjoyed it as always. And definitely subscribe, like, do all the stuff. Do all the stuff because it's good content.
Appreciate it. And maybe we'll see Mike and Dave back, depending on if United get a result in the cup against Villa. Because if we knock them out of that as well, I'll force them back on if I have to. But until then, thank you guys for joining us. And we'll see you again soon.
Take care.